Thank you for tuning in to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jackie. This is our very first episode, so please be patient with us as we work out all the kinks with our sound, music, and editing. During this episode, we are going to cover the Hinter Kaifeck murders. Jessica's going to be telling us the story today, so if you guys would like to drop us some comments or go find our pages, you can look us up on Facebook at Crime Cats, on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime, or on Twitter at crimecastpods. We would love to hear from you and what you think of our show. Please go like and subscribe, and thank you for listening.
Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. This is our first episode, and we are so excited. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Jackie.
And we're your hosts. We grew up in an area with a very low crime rate, so we didn't really see a lot of crime in our youths.
But both of us grew up mostly watching Unsolved Mysteries, The First 48, Forensic Files, and all the classics with our amazing mothers.
Yes. It really embedded us a love for sleuthing and piecing together crimes, and just a general morbid curiosity. My personal favorite thing about true crime is the psychology behind what makes a person choose a life of crime. Our podcast will be tackling a little bit of every type of case. We don't really want to specialize in a specific type of case, like unsolved or cold case, or missing persons, or serial killers. We will talk about it all. And we'll probably pepper in some true crime pop culture, like our takes on popular documentaries, shows, and other podcasts that we like as well. We're both avid listeners of podcasts, and we definitely have been inspired largely by other podcasts that we like.
My favorite is Morbid, and Jessica turned me on to Crime Junkies, so.
Yes, we really are big podcast fans.
Podcasters.
Yes, for sure. We also really like Going West, Crime Salad, and This Is Why We Drink, and even Case File, which.
I've never listened to Case File, actually.
You got to check it out. It's a little different than our normal listening, because it's just one person talking, rather than the banter that we like.
Yeah. Okay, so that's why I like Southern Fried True Crime. I really like listening to her, too. She tells a good story.
Yeah, it's really nice, especially to go to sleep, too, because his voice is very soothing.
That's a little too creepy.
I know.
That's a little
but it's kind
on the
of like watching
side.
First 48 while you're trying to go to sleep, you know?
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, I do. I'm a weirdo.
For sure.
But yeah, so definitely, guys, keep it in mind that we are definitely amateurs. But we are going to do our very, very best to research everything very thoroughly. And if we're wrong, go ahead and call us out.
Yeah, leave us a comment.
Tell us what we got wrong.
Send us a tweet, Twitter, a twatter, something, whatever it is. I don't use Twitter.
I'm the Twitter user here.
I'm the Instagram user.
Yes, we both like Facebook. But.
Yeah.
So let's introduce ourselves. I'm Jessica. I'm 30 years old, and I'm an assistant clinical manager of a pulmonary and critical care practice. I've worked there 9 years, and I'm basically family now. I am obsessed with cats and crime. So here we are. Mostly obsessed with my own cat, Boris Mielski. He is a 2-year-old Russian Blue Rescue. We had a local shelter here in Alabama. He is a handful.
He's an asshole.
He's actually literally a Sour Patch Kid. One minute he's cuddling me and sweet and purring up a storm. And the next minute he's biting me.
He attacks the crap out of you.
He really does. I constantly have scratches and bites all over my arms.
But it's just you.
It is just me.
He doesn't do it to me.
He doesn't do it to my husband either. Cullen is always scot-free. I mean, not always, but he has bit him sometimes. But mostly me.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's why he's an only child. Because he was returned to the shelter twice before he came home with me.
Oh.
For babe. Just being a general asshole to other people's pets. He's just a loner, you know? He wants exactly that. 2.5 minutes of pets. Not one more second you're getting bites. And this little jerk is going to be our official mascot.
Boris is for sure the most lovable asshole I know.
It's ready.
Okay, thank you. That was my kid telling me he made taquitos for us. So that's Brody, go. Babe, love you. Okay. Anywho, I'm Jackie. I'm 32, and I'm in property management. I manage an association management company here on the Gulf Coast. I, like Jessica, am obsessed with cats. I have 5, and that was an accident. I started out with 2, adopted 1. She ended up being pregnant, and we gave away all but 2. And then, like, a month ago, this little kitten just walks in my house, and he hasn't left since. I have a dog named Pepper, and she's about 1 year old. I'm a single mom of 2. I have a son and a daughter. And I love going to see heavy metal music, going to live shows. I'm obsessed with all things dark and morbid a little bit. Jessica and I have known each other since high school, but more recently in the last, 5 or so years?
Yeah, 5 years.
We've become best friends. And I love you.
I love you.
But enough of the sappy shit. Let's get into our episode. Jess, what do you have for us to sink our teeth into today?
So, for our first episode, I'm going to be taking the reins. And we are going to be talking about a crazy case. Originally, I wanted to do a local case that was fairly recent about this 14-year-old boy here in Alabama who confessed to killing his entire family.
That shit was cray-cray.
It is. But, you know, to me, it's just interesting because how can this seemingly innocent child, basically, do something this heinous?
Wait till you have children.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love mine, but they can be monsters sometimes.
Clearly. But, you know, there just wasn't a ton of information on this yet, so we'll probably be covering that in the future when there's more information. So, our actual case we will be telling you today is about, and my script is mixed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did that. That's my bad. I think it's backwards. Here, use mine.
Okay. So, this week is just, this is a crazy case. It's actually one of the most famous unsolved cases in the world. It is the strange tale of the Hinterkaifeck murders, which has strangely been stalking me, actually. When we were choosing our first case, my husband, Cullen.
Shout out to Cullen. He feeds us incredible food.
He's a great cook.
He is.
He recommended this one because he found it so interesting, and he's a researcher. He researches things constantly for no reason, just because he wants to know. And so I looked into it and found it interesting as well, but originally I had decided against it because I was really intimidated by the fact that it's a German case and I'm terrified to mispronounce things. But the next day on my way to work, it popped up as the next episode to listen to on the Morbid podcast. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Because we had just talked about it the night before. And then, you know, the next couple of days later, we're watching Lore on Amazon Prime.
Also, check that out.
Yes, it's really
cool. It's really kind of creepy.
It's creepy. They originally started out as a podcast, and then Amazon picked them up, and now they have their own show.
Future goals.
Right? But they have this great episode on Hinterkaifeck as well. So that came up now 3 times. So I decided that this case was for me since, you know, 3 is my lucky number. So let's dive in. Hinterkaifeck was between the Bavarian towns of, now, again, this is
what
my terrified words, Ingolstadt, and Schrobenhausen, which I...
Schrobenhausen.
Colin helped me with that one. Schrobenhausen. Which is about 40 miles or 70 kilometers, depending on where you live, north of Munich. And about 1 mile hinter,
which is German for behind,
the village of Kaifeck, hence the name.
Hinterkaifeck.
It's a small rural farm, which was home to 35-year-old Victoria Gabriel, sorry about that, and her two children, 7-year-old Kazilla and 2-year-old Joseph.
What a name.
I know, Kazilla.
Runs into Godzilla.
Right?
I'm sorry.
Well, she was named after her grandmother. She was, her grandmother was Kazilla as well, Gubler, and her grandfather, Andreas, he was 62 years old. So she was 72 and he was 62, which I found interesting.
Cougar alert.
So now, this family was not well-liked in this village. A statement given to police in 1922 by a local farmer who occasionally worked with Andreas summed up the family as such. The Grublers were a diligent and frugal people. They lived very withdrawn lives and, if possible, avoided any interactions with other people.
Same.
Right? The father was the least liked of the bunch. His proclivities for incest and abuse were frequently discussed in the village.
Yikes.
Supposedly, Andreas and Kazilla had other children beside Victoria, but she was actually the only one to survive his violence to adulthood.
Dude, how was he not put in jail?
Because they were so rural. You know, I guess the village just turned their blind eye.
Sorry, we're from Alabama, y'all. That song just like pops in my head every time we hear about
rural farm and incest.
Yeah, right? Sorry, I mean, we are from Alabama, but I apologize if you are from Alabama.
We love Alabama. Don't worry.
But we're on the Gulf Coast. It's not like we're in real Alabama. Yeah. We're like 5 minutes from Florida.
True that.
I don't know. Then you got Florida man over there.
Right? What's okay. Worse?
Sorry. A little off topic.
But, yeah, you know, according to records, 7 years before the murders, Andreas and Victoria were convicted of incest.
Yikes.
She actually served a whole month in jail, and her father was jailed for an entire year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, he's technically abusing her.
And she gets put in jail.
And she gets put in jail.
That's backwards as shit. That is some Alabama shit.
Right? It really is. It's about like our legal system here.
Right?
Well, lots of people in the town believed that Victoria's 2-year-old son, Joseph, was the child of Lorenz Schlittenbauer, a man who lived very close to the family, who Victoria had a very brief relationship with. But Andreas forbid Victoria from marrying him.
I wonder why.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he wanted her for himself. Like a creep.
That's disgusting.
But some of the other neighbors believed that Joseph was not Lorenz's child. They believed that he was the product of Andreas's incestuous relationship with his daughter, Victoria. So, yeah, this would pretty much prove that this was going on with the abuse after he got out of jail. And the true identity of Joseph's father is still a mystery. The only family that was relatively liked was Victoria. She was a beautiful singer, and she sang in the church choir. So, this case has a lot of hard things to determine from fact from fiction, because so many statements were just derived from gossip.
Yeah, it seems like a very...
So, a lot of the townspeople that all hated them... And thought, you know, they were gross, like we do.
Right.
Well, we thought Andreas was gross. He is gross.
Yeah.
That's a fact. It is a fact.
Because he got put in jail.
Right.
In the big time.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason he got put in jail originally is because a maid caught him in the hay. Literally
robbing in the hay.
Right? Isn't that some Alabama shit?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But despite all this gossip, this family was a hardworking family who was just surviving the harsh German winters. And they had done so for many years before things took a turn for the worse.
I want to go to Germany.
Me too.
I would love to.
It would, you know, we have a friend that went to Germany.
Man.
Yeah. She had a great time there.
We need to go and just write it off as an investigation.
Right? We should go and investigate some cool castles.
Yeah.
I'm totally down. Yeah, let's do that one day. But the family had a lot of spooky, weird things come up in the months before the murders. Their longtime maid, actually, was convinced that the farm was haunted. There was always objects moving around that she would place one place and they would be turning up somewhere else. The doors and windows just were randomly opening when she knew that she closed her window and it would just be open the next morning. Hmm. And then strange voices that she would hear. Mostly weird sounds coming from the attic.
Shoot, I'd leave too, man.
Right?
Bye.
She was like, I gotta get out of here. Andreas, this is not for me. And
see ya.
He thought she was crazy. He was like, you are mentally disturbed.
He thought she was mentally disturbed.
Right.
He's a little bit off the rocker.
Exactly. But, you know, he didn't report this to the police, obviously, because he thought she was crazy.
Right.
And, you know, she wasn't the only one hearing these weird things. Cazilla Jr., the little girl, also would hear sounds at night. She would stay up all night out of fear and was getting very little sleep. At one point, her teacher pointed out and asked her if there were any problems at home because she kept falling asleep in class. And the child described chasing her grandmother through the woods in the middle of the night.
I don't know.
We could never really find why this would happen.
That sounds like a hallucination.
I know. Like, it's a fever dream or something. Yeah.
I have some pretty crazy dreams. I don't wake up and think that they're real.
Right?
Some of like them, I wish they were real. I know.
So the other night, y'all, this was crazy.
That's crazy.
I lock my bedroom door because I'm paranoid, because I do this, you know, all the time and, you know, research all these horrific things. And
you go
scared.
To sleep watching this
and
stuff?
And I watch the first 48 as I go to sleep, yeah. So I lock my bedroom door.
That'll do it.
But anyway, the other night, I'm trying to sleep and, you know, I'm kind of like, I notice my watch is dying. So I put it on the charger. And I go to sleep.
Smart watches.
Yeah, I have a smart watch. It's a Samsung Galaxy watch, and it's great. I love it.
I have an Apple watch, but I don't ever wear it.
I wear it constantly. But, you know.
Yeah.
The times. I'm a millennial.
These are the times.
God, we really do sound like we're from Alabama.
Right? Yeah, we do. Sorry, guys. You have to put up with it. But yeah, anyway, so I wake up the next morning and my watch is on my couch and the bedroom door is still locked and it's fully charged, y'all. So how does my watch go from dead to fully charged the next morning in my living room through a locked door?
I still think it was Boris.
But I just don't know.
He picked it up with his little asshole mouth and he carried it in there.
Through a locked door, though?
I mean, I still think that you were sleepwalking.
Sleepwalk. But I mean, it's happened, but.
Yeah, so.
it still creeps me out.
You talk in your sleep.
I literally called all my friends and was like, you guys.
You talk in your sleep.
I do talk in my sleep. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah.
So Cazilla, she was just having a real hard time. With this, and her parents just thought she was also crazy. They were like, there's nothing in the attic. They go up there, there's nothing. They're like, you're crazy. So things get even creepier from here, which is like, what?
March 1922.
In March, things get crazy. Well, when Andreas was surveying the property after a large snowstorm, he discovered footprints in the snow that originated in the forest and led right up to his house, y'all.
Ooh.
And the most creepy part is he didn't find any footprints that led back to the woods. So there's
somebody was squatting.
A single set of footprints going right to his house. Mm. And this even creeped the creep out. At this point,
I mean,
he's like, okay, is there someone in our house? Like, he's worried that there's a potential intruder, which, I mean, at least he's smart. So he searches his entire property and buildings and is looking for any other mysterious tracks or anything else out of the ordinary, and couldn't find anything. So somehow he's able to go to sleep that night.
Not me.
And then later he is woken by a strange noise coming from the attic. Thinking back to his maid's insistence that there's ghosts in the attic, he checks there and there's nothing. So he goes, you know, back, he goes throughout his day. And then the next day, he finds a strange newspaper on his porch that none of his family members had purchased.
So how did the newspaper get there since they were so rural?
We don't know. It literally,
I mean, like the paper boy driving 20 miles out here.
There were paper boys in 1922 in Germany.
Were they not?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, they were.
Obviously, nobody purchased the paper.
So. Right. No one in the family purchased it, and it was a trek to go get this paper. So
I walked 10 miles in snow back in my day.
Exactly. To go get a newspaper? I don't think so. But yeah, it was a pretty good distance. So, and not long after this, on March the 30th of 1922, a set of keys disappeared. From the house.
What were the keys to?
The house.
Oh.
There were only two sets of keys that in existence. Their keys and then the spare keys. And the spare keys went missing. Mm. In the search for the keys, Andreas comes upon his tool shed. And he noticed that there were scratches all over it. And it looks like someone had crushed the lock. So.
Might have been trying to break in.
Somebody was definitely trying to break in. And weird note. Inside that tool shed was the eventual murder weapon.
What?
Yeah. So that's creepy. But the people of the village knew all about this because he went into town and told them about this.
Spreading that gossip.
Yeah. I mean, they're already everyone talking about him, so he's just going to make it worse.
Yeah. I mean, why not participate, right?
So yeah, there's all these rumors flying about this family already. So now he's telling everybody, you know, weird shit's happening at my farm, hearing sounds, there's these quitting. Footprints, and now someone's breaking in my tool shed.
I got put in jail for incest.
Right. So then a couple of days later, another really weird thing happens. There's a butcher walking home from work, and he notices someone in the Rugler's field, and they have a flashlight, and they're kind of far away, and he's just walking down the trail. Because they didn't have streets, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe they down the rocky road.
But anyway, he's just walking, right? Minding his own damn business. And all of a sudden, this person that he sees in the field starts charging him.
What?
Starts running at him with the light shining in his eyes. And he's like, holy cow. So he just takes off running. And he's like,
I would too after I shit my pants.
Right.
Like, I mean, I'd be leaving a trail of shit.
Why are you chasing me? Like, I'm just walking home.
Right.
So yeah, that was pretty creepy too. This poor unexpected villager just walking by the farm. Amid all these strange occurrences, the day after the discovery of the tool shed, an attempted break-in, the lost keys, and this crazy butcher poor guy running away. On May 31st, 1922, a new maid by the name of Maria Baumgartner came to replace the one who had quit 6 months earlier.
Mm.
Maria's first day on the job, unfortunately, would also be her last. And this was the last day anyone would ever see the Gruglers alive again.
Dun, dun, dun.
So on April the 1st, 1922,
April Fools,
the local coffee merchant, which that's cool.
We used to have a place called the Coffee Merchant.
Yeah,
remember
did,
that?
That's cool.
Yeah,
that
it was right across from the police department. We used to go watch all of our like friends and these local punk rock shows play like two shows because then it got shut down because that's old true. People were like, ain't no punk rock shows in my town.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of old people in our town too. They're not the nicest all the time. Some of them are really cool, though, because I work with them, so they're great sometimes.
They weren't cool, though, when we were 16.
No, they were not.
Had, like, pop punk shows with our friends. Those whippersnappers. Right?
But the local coffee merchant, he came to the farm, and he noticed that there was no one there. So he saw Joseph's father, supposed father, Lorenz Schlittenbauer, in town. And he was like, hey, man, where's the Grublers? They're not there. And Lorenz is like, you know, it's normal. It's not normal.
Well,
at all.
Yeah, well,
they're recluses. So for them to not be home was weird to the coffee merchant. He's like, they're literally always
home.
And Lorenz is like, whatever. He just kind of brushes it off. And really, the only time the Grublers ever went anywhere was church.
Got to get their Jesus on.
Right.
You know,
to repent for all their sins.
No, man. No. True that.
But, you know, Lorenz, he was like, whatever. He didn't really think much of it. So days pass, and more rumors begin, and suspicion arises. Several other merchants and tradesmen come by, and the farm's still empty. And actually, one mechanic who had been hired previously to hire to fix the machine found the house completely locked. No one would answer the door. So he just dismantled the door.
I'm
just going to take this door off and fix the stuff that I've already been paid for. Because he had already been paid. So he's I got to do this job. But, you know, what's really crazy is he noticed while he was working that there was a man in the field. And he just thought, this is just a farm worker. And, you know, he just finished his work. And
he didn't pay any attention to it.
He finished his work and left. But, you know, as he was leaving, he also noticed that the family dog was wandering around injured.
Oh, poor pupper.
He had a cut on his head. And he was just like, oh, that dog is injured.
Let me not do anything about it.
Right? What a rude person.
I mean, I would save a dog over a human any day.
Exactly. Like, poor pup. And then on Sunday, two of Victoria's friends, they decided to stop by after church because they were like, you know, it's really weird that the entire family didn't attend church that day when every single Sunday forever they've been there. And then when they got there, the farm doors were locked to the house. There was nothing. The cows and everything were locked up in the barn. It looked like literally no one was there. On Monday at Kazilla Junior's school, her teacher noticed that she was absent. and she was obviously worried because, you know, in this time period, for whatever reason, the children go to school on Saturdays as well. So she was absent Saturday
and
Monday.
Man, that sucks to go to school on Saturday.
Right? God, these poor children have one day off. Even us, we have 2 days off.
Right?
So, yeah, eventually, on April 4th, Lorenz Schlittenbauer sent his two older sons to check on the Hinterkaifeck farm because the mechanic told him about his weird occurrence about no one being there again. So, he's like, okay, this is kind of weird. So, he sent his sons to go check it out. So, when they got there, same deal. Completely empty farm.
Nobody home.
Nobody home.
Yeah.
So shortly thereafter, his sons come back. Nothing. But they did notice there was a whining in the barn along with the cattle.
They didn't go check.
Kids.
Why? Like, so?
Teenagers.
I'd be like, what's that?
Even
let me go look. I might die, but let me see what's in there.
Same.
Okay, I won't say it right now, but I just had some, I'll say it at the end.
Okay. So, unconcerned, Lorenz Schlittenbauer went to his neighbors, Jacob Sigel?
Yeah.
Jacob Sigel and Michael Pohl and asked them to accompany him to the Hinterkaifeck farm to investigate. They arrived around 5 p.m. on Tuesday, April the 4th. The trio walked through the rusty, creaky gates of the farm, seeing no one and no movement among the land. The air was eerily still. All the doors to all the buildings were all closed, except for the machine house, which the mechanic had left open.
Mm-hmm.
They decided first to search the barn. They had to pry the locked door to the barn open. Once they got it open, Lorenz entered first, following Jacob and then Michael, where there were several young cattle standing in the doorway, connecting the barn to the stable. But otherwise, the building was empty. In the dimly lit barn, Lorenz stumbled his way across a pile of hay towards the cattle. And then suddenly, Michael gasped, "There's a foot." Which, what?
I mean, okay, so back to the whining. When they went the first time, this person who, "There's a foot," could have been half alive and they could have saved him.
That is so true.
Like,
and this,
yeah, this is why you check shit out, people.
Exactly. Exactly. Always check on your friends, y'all.
Yeah.
So once this happens and they immediately see the foot, Lorenz stops and he's like, oh gosh. So he looks down at the hay, which was covered with a large wooden board. Once he moves the board, he pulls the foot out, just grabs it and pulls it.
Okay, no.
Lorenz could clearly see this was the body of Andreas, the man who would not let him marry his lover, Victoria.
Because he was doing some side daddy business.
Exactly.
Not the good kind of daddy either.
Under the hay.
Not that sugar daddy.
No, not that. Yeah, so under the hay, he sees the bludgeon bodies of Kazilla Jr., Victoria, and Kazilla Sr., all carefully stacked on top of each other, covered in hay in a sloppy attempt to conceal this horrific scene.
Mm.
Andreas was dressed in his trousers and nightshirt, Kazilla Jr. in her nightgown. Victoria was fully dressed, but had no shoes on, and Kazilla Sr. was fully dressed. All of these victims had severe and gruesome facial and head injuries. At this point, the horrified search party proceeded to frantically look for the other family members inside the farmhouse. The youngest child, Joseph, who Lorenz thought could possibly be his child.
Yeah.
He finds him dead in his crib.
Mm-hmm.
How old was he?
He was 2.
Oh, man.
He was bludgeoned so badly that his crib was just completely decimated.
Wow, that's sad.
Then they found Maria, who was also fully dressed, bludgeoned as well.
Which is the maid.
The maid, yes. And I found conflicting reports about where she was. One report said that she was found with a foot protruding underneath her bed. And then there was another one that said she was in the bed with the sheets pulled up on top of her.
Hmm.
Her still unpacked bag lay next to her because Dang. She had literally just gotten there.
Think hours twice before you take a job, right?
Right? Damn. I mean, she literally hadn't even unpacked her bag. She probably hadn't even started her job, technically.
Yeah.
Poor thing. They were all found, the family members inside and the maid was found lying in pools of coagulated blood. In total, 6 people, all 5 Gloober families members, plus their maid, all brutally murdered in cold blood. The men immediately notified police, and a detective came right away from Munich. The locals were reportedly very fearful, and it took much of police resources communicating with them and discerning the fact from all these rumors that are swirling around about this family. And also just trying to keep them away from the farm.
Because everybody wanted to go see. Yeah.
Everyone wants to go see this farm now.
Same.
Although no official autopsy report exists.
So long ago.
Right. I mean, so long. 97 years, actually.
Back in my day.
Right. There are no autopsy reports, but there is a telegram report from the police files that detail the injuries of the victims as such.
Now, this is a trigger warning. If you guys are squeamish at all or, you know, anything triggers you, you might want to skip past this part.
So, Cazilla Sr., she had 7 large head wounds, a cracked skull. The right side of her face had severe wounds, exposing her bone. Andreas, the right side of his face, had been torn open and his skull was smashed.
Like, I'm not down for anybody dying, but, you know, Andreas, I don't feel bad for him at all.
Yeah, but he's kind of, you know, the worst.
Yeah.
Victoria, though, gosh, poor Victoria. Her injuries to the right side of her face were just horrible. She had a cracked cranium, and this is interesting, 9 star-shaped head wounds.
Interesting.
Star-shaped. But, you know.
What, like a hammer or something?
Well, the Malik, which was eventually found to be the
murder weapon,
has a pointed side and then a flat side.
Oh, makes sense.
So the pointed side was probably what got her. And then on the right side of her face was just completely smashed in. Cazilla Jr., she also had a shattered skull. She reportedly had been found with tufts of hair in her own hands. Aww.
I bet she was the one that was whining because...
Yeah. She had... Doctors thought that she had lived for a while after...
I bet she was the one that was whining and crying.
2 or 3 hours after the incident, after her, you know, original attack. She was one of the only victims that had the chance to be saved after the attack.
Yeah.
And poor Joseph, he also had a shattered skull. His cot, or crib, had been smashed completely, breaking it where it stood. Marie, she had a right side facial injury as well, and her skull was also smashed. Now, a Malik is like, the weapon is very similar to a pickaxe, but with a fat side on the other side. All of these victims suffered severe head injuries from an unknown blunt object, which we know now what it is. But the police pieced together a mode of killing that entailed the murderer luring each family member out to the barn one by one, possibly using cattle, and then bludgeoning them, and then moving on to the next.
I mean, I guess I'd have to see the layout of the farm, but is it so far away from the house that you wouldn't be able to hear these screams?
And that's my thought, is I don't think they had a chance. I think that he got them so quickly that they just... Because when you have a head injury, it's so quick. It knocks you out. You don't even have a chance to scream a lot of times in these cases.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and then after he got all the family members that he could outside, he then enters the house and killed Joseph in his crib, and then lastly the maid. Due to their state of dress and Marie's belongings still being packed and Cazilla's absence from school on Saturday. Again, poor Cazilla having to go to school on Saturday.
No, man.
These details were assumed by the police that the murders must have occurred on March 31st. Although the possibility also began to arise that the murderer had stayed on the farm sometime after the crimes were committed. Possibly days, even.
Ew.
Which is creepy.
I mean, they do that, though.
Yeah. Some neighbors did give statements that they saw smoke coming from the bakery's ovens.
You think that he was going to try to burn the bodies, or?
Well, there is a theory that they were burning his clothes.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because he would be covered in blood, theoretically.
But then he's just walking around in the snow naked?
Well, he probably wore Andreas's clothes. My guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Or he brought clothes with him. Who knows? Maybe he brought a backpack.
Did they have backpacks back then?
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah. Well, they're more like rucksacks.
Oh, okay. I need to brush up on my 1920s, guys. I don't know anything.
But yeah, you know, it was creepy that they would be, that the chimney would be burning, you know, after the murder.
Yeah.
One neighbor, Michael Pollock, which was unfortunately lost in full, but it was reported in part that he stated on April the 21st that he saw the oven door was closed, but half opening in the evening.
April the 1st or the You said the 21st.
No, April the 1st. Sorry.
Okay.
The chimney was giving out smoke in the evening, and he saw a fire in the oven. An electric torch.
They had electricity back then?
Yes. 20s, man. Great Gatsby.
I legit. I can't. Everything, you know, prior to me being born doesn't exist.
You're thinking the 1800s here.
I probably really am thinking of the 1800s and stuff.
But, I mean, they were so poor that, you know, that you're not probably not super far off.
Yeah.
But actually, the Gribblers were not poor. Actually, I don't know why I said they're poor. They're not poor.
They had a big farm.
They had a big farm. They had decent money.
I need to watch some movies.
The area was poor, though. Not them. Yeah. They were actually probably the most wealthiest family in the area.
Mm-hmm.
But their area was very poor. But yeah, this family, this neighbor, he did notice the smoke coming out, so that creeped him out. And the family dog, a Pomeranian, my favorite.
Oh, the puppy.
I love those little floofs. They're cute.
They are cute. They're yappy, though.
Yeah, but that's okay.
I mean, I can't say anything. My dog yaps all the time.
He was found tied up, so don't worry, guys. He was fine. Even with his head
injury. Was he the one? Oh, yeah, head wound.
Yes, he had the cut on his little head. His little head. I'm going to pretend he's white in my head, just because that's my favorite kind of Pomeranian. I don't know if that makes it worse, because then there's blood all over his head. He's white and it's red.
Maybe.
Okay, he's black. So anyways, he was tied up, and he was reported to not look fed. He seemed very hungry when he was found. But several statements claimed that the cattle had been fed.
Weird.
Well, but, you know, think about it. All the commotion and noise they would have made. They would have been mooing and screaming, basically.
Why not feed the dog, man? Why you got to be an asshole?
Because dogs bark all the time. That's not weird for a dog to bark.
But you still feed it, like, just to be...
Maybe he doesn't like dogs.
I don't like him.
Right.
So, there's that.
But yeah, you know, the cows definitely were fed. And, you know, other stuff in the farm seemed to be in working order.
That's probably why you stayed later on the farm. Everybody keeps, you know...
To try and conceal.
Yeah, to hide all the stuff and to feed the animals. And
keep the farm in farm.
So it would take
keep
a farming.
Little... Yeah, keep being farming. A farm. Eat. Jinx.
Yeah.
You owe me a white claw.
Ain't no laws when you're drinking claws. In fact, there are. But, there you are. Know.
Don't get in trouble. Don't murder people because you drink white claw.
Yeah, no. Disclaimer. I wonder if we're going to get sued by White Claw. No, we just plugged them.
Maybe we can
get
them.
Sponsored
yeah,
by
we
them.
Need, we need. I would love to be sponsored by
just
White Claw.
Just send me all the White Claws.
Yes. I'm keto.
Mango
so,
flavored, please. You know,
I don't drink the sugars.
Yeah.
I don't need them sugars.
I just pictured a really old cycling
on a porch. Don't get me the sugars. That's me. I'm the keto police. No sugars. But anyway, the real police, they were really quick. They were really fast to start naming names. Everyone was a suspect, basically.
I mean, this is a small town. So
yeah. So everybody
got nobody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
So, and everybody doesn't like them. So yeah. They have plenty of people who were possibly involved.
Right.
And, you know, the very first person that they look at was Lorenz Schlittenbauer.
I mean,
he was the first subject
of suspects.
Yes.
You know,
They theorized that he was traumatized by his unfortunately recent death of his baby with his wife, who he remarried shortly after.
That's like
Victoria.
That's like a stretch, you know, like I get it, but that's not going to make somebody murder somebody.
That's only part of it. He was also being forced into paying child support for Joseph, who he believed was not his own child, but the result of the incestual relationship with Andreas.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be mad.
And this family has more money than his.
True.
So he's like, man, why are you trying to steal all my money when y'all are richer than me?
Right.
So he thought, the police thought that that he's come to murder Victoria and Andreas specifically, and the family because of this.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then this theory was bolstered by his strange behavior. I mentioned earlier that he nonchalantly just grabbed the body and started pulling on it.
Yeah.
With no repulsiveness. He's not like, this is gross. I don't want to touch this dead body, the blood all over it.
Mm-hmm.
He's just right at, you know, totally normal for him.
Yeah, it's just day-to-day thing, you know?
Yeah, he just so nonchalantly handled the bodies of people that he knows. And Victoria, yeah.
I mean, it'd be different if he was, like, some kind of forensic scientist or whatever. But he's just a farmer. He's just a dude, man.
So, that was weird enough. But if that wasn't weird enough, he also knew his way around the farm extensively.
But didn't he date Victoria? Yes. Wouldn't he know his way around
the farm? But how much would Andreas let him come into the house? Because...
Well, maybe not he let, you know.
Maybe
we all know we'll boy snuck in when our family wasn't around.
We'll give him that. We'll give him that. But the police extensively questioned him and were just unable to tie him to the crime. They said his behavior could be explained to shock, and the knowledge of the farm's layout could be explained by his relationship with Victoria.
See, like Jack said. There we go.
Schlittenbauer still remains a suspect high on the list today, though.
Yeah, I mean, he would be my first
rightfully
suspect.
So, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Another couple of interesting pieces of
information
was that Victoria, recently before the murders, donated 700 gold marks, which was just a vast sum of money at that time, which would have been all of her savings.
I wonder what that equals to like today's money.
Her church. I mean,
that's a good thing to Google. Somebody Google that for us. We don't want to.
Yeah. But yeah, that was only 2 weeks before the murders. The pastor of the church surmised it had to be Victoria, even though she did it, you know, not in her name, technically.
But why?
Because they were the richest family in the area.
So she just did it to be nice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly. But well, why would you give away all your money?
Yeah.
I thought that was weird. And there were also some other weird things, like the fact that 1 year later, the murder weapon originally had been presumed to be a pickaxe, but it was eventually uncovered 1 year later by none other than Schlittenbauer.
Because he put it there.
Well,
I mean, that's my theory. We'll get into my theory later.
Maybe he did. The new owners of Hinterkaifeck were going to demolish the farmhouse.
Okay, quick question. Mm-hmm. Would you buy a house or a farm that you knew
where there heinous murders?
Family was
okay,
murdered.
Like, you know, American Horror Story.
Right.
The murder house?
Murder house.
Like, yeah, I don't think I would.
Hell to the no-no. Mm-mm. No. I could
not.
I mean, I believe in spirits and ghosts and stuff. And
I couldn't. I couldn't do that.
Bad juju.
Right? And then just bad stuff, you know?
I'm glad your house is new.
My house is brand new, y'all. We bought a brand spanking new house that no one walked in before
me. I ain't gotta worry about it.
They literally picked it for me. So there ain't no spirits here. But yeah, Schlittenbauer, he basically, the new owners that bought the house, then demolished it. And now it is a memorial. There's no new house there. It's just the land. And then there's a little memorial for them.
I'd like to see that.
We'll put some pictures on Instagram and on Facebook. Because they're really interesting. We'll show the farmhouse and the layout and all that, too. But yeah, they found it in a hidden nook of one of the outer sheds of the property, which was, again, pointed out by Schlittenbauer.
Mm-hmm. It's like he's trying to frame himself.
Right?
Like, who would do that? Oh, I'm just trying to help, but I know where everything is.
Psychos. Then the police were like, interesting. So they, of course, tested it for forensics, and they found human blood.
Would do.
And it was unquestionably the murder weapon. However, the police claimed that they had already searched that area.
So, but did they? You know that we both know. We've seen enough cases to where you get these rookie detectives and whatnot that don't sweep the area like they're supposed to or do a grid search.
Especially in a rural area like this.
Yeah, I mean, they probably just don't care.
So either A, they just didn't see it, or B, which is worse, the murderer came back and put it there.
Yeah. Both are plausible.
Very much so. Lorenz, he's now eliminated. So from the large...
So they eliminated him?
They eliminated him.
What?
After all of this.
I don't think so.
I don't understand why.
No, no.
But they did. They actually considered Victoria's husband, Carl Gabriel, a suspect, theorizing that he came back from the war and killed them.
That's a stretch.
But the theory didn't last long because they had discovered that Carl had been reportedly slain in France almost a decade before, with many fellow soldiers attesting to seeing his body.
Oh, well, you know, that'll do it.
That will do it. In 2017, the book The Man from the Train by the writer Bill James and his daughter Rachel McCarthy James speculated that there may be a link to a serial killer, Paul Mueller. Hmm. Mueller was a German immigrant living in America who seems to be responsible for a string of unsolved murders in the U.S. in the first two decades of the 20th century. In these murders, the M.O. matched Hinterkaifeck exactly.
Really?
Yes.
We should cover that.
That's what we're doing.
No, I mean...
You mean you want to talk about more about Paul?
Yes,
I got you.
Yes.
Okay, we totally can because I don't really know other than this small amount. He was always targeting a household with a prepubescent daughter, and always killing each member of the family with an axe.
Hmm.
The string of murders stopped abruptly in 1912, leaving the authors to speculate that the killer was either imprisoned or moved away. Mueller was under suspicion in 1912, but then vanished shortly after, becoming a suspect. Never to be seen again.
Ever, really?
Period.
Not, like, found dead or
nope.
Anything?
Never.
Ever?
Ever.
Ever?
Ever.
Forever?
Sorry. But, you know, they assumed that he must have returned to his homeland of Germany, where he then could have went on to commit the Hinterkaifeck murders.
Okay, then.
But unfortunately, there's literally no way to confirm this, because he was never seen or heard from again. So there was never a spotting of him in Germany that we know of or anything like that. I kind of want to read the book, so we'll have to get that book.
Yeah, for sure.
But the only things that really are for certain in this case were these crimes were committed by someone who knew their way around the farm, as evidenced by the continued upkeep after the murders. And, you know, the expert wielding of the mattock. Because that is a big weapon. It's hard to swing.
Yeah, you'd have to be pretty
buff.
You'd
have to be pretty strong, yeah. The
ripped.
Brutalities of these murders, they suggest that they had been committed by someone who had a personal vendetta against one or several of the groups.
I wonder who.
We wonder. But, you know, the police, they just came up with nothing. Which is just insane to me.
Nothing? You mean the guy that, you know, they
literally
let go?
Literally handed them everything?
Uh-huh.
Including the bodies and the murder weapon?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I wonder.
You know, even over the years, they turned to clairvoyance to attempt to speak to the beheaded skulls of the Gugler family.
That's a little much.
The skulls
I'm not
were...
one for mixing that kind of stuff
right.
into investigation.
This is science. And they let these clairvoyants, which, I mean... Do
that's
you.
Like going to a psychic
cool,
and
but,
I mean I don't knock anybody
it.
That believes it.
Same.
It's just not something
it's
that
not
you use to
in a case.
Right.
Yeah. I don't like
yeah.
that. Because they literally beheaded this family and sent all of their heads to Munich. Just try and talk to the skulls.
Really?
But of course
that's a little crazy.
Right?
That's a little much.
And it's really sad because in 1923
that's a little overdramatic.
Right. And it's just sad to me because the family, after so, were buried without their heads. Because the skulls, unfortunately, were lost in World War II.
Oh, man.
And they never were found again.
That's
so
awful.
No one really knows. And the initial evidence that was gathered at the scene is also lost. Not all of it, but some of it is. And if it's not lost, it's so ancient that you really can't get much information from it. Although in 2007, now this one, y'all, I'm going to try it real hard. Fernstonfieldbrook.
Where are we at?
Fernstonfieldbrook Police Academy.
That sounds about right. I mean, it's probably not, but we'll
yeah,
go with it.
It's close
enough.
It's
fine.
There's a police academy. They took on the case as a cold case. But because of the relatively basic forensic techniques that were used in the original investigation, as well as some of the evidence being lost and the death of pretty much all of the suspects at this point, they were unable to conclusively identify the murder, of course.
Hmm.
They did, however, all agree on the same theory, But
what's that?
They won't release it out of respect for the family.
What family? They're all probably dead.
Well, they're descendants from that family.
I mean, they probably don't even know.
My grandmother was born in 1921, so.
I mean, probably mine was too.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it's just crazy because the police, they can't release it. Their theory is a secret.
I hate when they do that. That's so stupid.
But yeah, so I guess the public will never really know what their theory is. But my personal theory, which has been peppered through this entire thing, because I'm not good at not telling my theories. Real great at concealing my feelings,
it's
y'all.
It's fine. Let it out. We're all here to share.
So my personal theory is that it's the same person who was the first suspect. The same person who found the body. The same person who found the murder weapon. It's Lorenz Schlittenbauer, obviously.
Yeah.
It fits the most well to not be him. He obviously hated Andreas for not letting him marry Victoria. He hated him for abusing Victoria, probably, because he probably loved her.
True.
I mean, that's, you know, I don't know that, but I'm assuming. And probably hated her, you know, for not leaving his family or her crazy family. He's like, why don't you just leave these folks? Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but she didn't. He just has too much stacked against him.
Yeah, I agree.
He was obviously inserting himself. He's the one who found the bodies.
He's the one who sent his sons.
Exactly. And then, you know, he also didn't just go over there by himself. Mm-hmm. He found two other people to witnesses of him.
Well, because he didn't want to be there by himself.
Exactly.
Because he didn't.
It's just too much for him to not be it, you know? If it walks like a duck, it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. I don't know. I don't put much theory into the American just because it just feels like a stretch, you know? It could be the American, but the Mueller murder serial killer guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, how do we know he ever left? He may have died in the U.S.
Yeah. I mean, if there's no way to tell.
Yeah, there's just no way. But one other side that I wanted to mention, it could be a supernatural. Yeah. It really could be Victoria's husband back from the grave, angry
that
she's having an incestuous relationship with her father.
I mean, that's a thing, but I don't know. I don't believe in all that. I mean, I believe in the supernatural, but I don't believe they come back and kill people like that. Like, I don't know. I'm different about
that. One other point that I just thought of. So every single injury was to the right side of the face, right?
Yeah.
So that means our killer is left-handed.
That is very true. Yeah, because I'm right-handed. I swing and so I would hit the left side of your face.
We would hit, because we're both right-handed. So we would, so either A, they are left-handed or they're doing it from behind.
True.
So they're attacking from behind them so they don't see them. And that's why they didn't scream.
Also, that's another theory. That's a good one. Also, but they could be, I know a bunch of people that are predominantly right-handed, like they write with right hands and all that stuff. But when it comes to sports and other things like that, their left hand is dominant.
True. Cullen's that way.
Yeah. So you never know.
Yeah, that is true.
But my theory, like I have to agree with you on the Schlittenbauer theory. It just fits really well. He tried to play it off as being worried that he hadn't seen the family, so he sent his kids to check out the situation. Like, nah, dude, you knew it was up. That's why you sent your kids, so you wouldn't be the one to discover it. You know, I don't know. As far as finding the real murder weapon, I for sure think he planted it. I mean, but what do I know? I just guess at shit all day long. But that's what we're here for, is to tell great stories, give semi-shitty opinions. I mean, you know, we do. If you have any theories on this case or want to research it more, we would love to hear from you. Drop us a comment or send us a message. We have a Facebook page. You can find us at Crime Cats. We have an Instagram, which is crimecats.truecrime. And then we have a Twitter, which is crimecatspod. So, I mean, that's our story for today. And I think the next one, I'm going to cover Mr. John Wayne Gacy.
I'm super excited because I know very little about that case. I've never heard a single podcast about him.
Right. But John Wayne Gacy, for me, is like what got me so into serial killers. I don't know why, but that was probably the first serial killer story I ever looked into in high school. And I did like a whole research on him. I don't even know where it's at. I'm going to have to redo it all. But, and then this song by this singer, Sufjan Stevens. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's like a little indie folk guy. He has a song called John Wayne Gacy. And that song used to be my favorite song. Just to, you got to listen to it. It's so haunting and weird and creepy.
I've actually never heard it.
But it's really good. And yeah, until next time, this is Jackie.
And this is Jess.
Stay spooky, my friends.